This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the rickety voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. How are we?
Not too bad, mate. Better than you, it would seem.
Struggling a little bit at the moment. Bad knee. Goalkeeper's knee.
What does this mean?
Well, I've kind of just made it up. I don't think it means anything, but it was or is an injury that was certainly from many, many years of goalkeeping. Doing a lot of plyometric training, actually. So again, you guys listening in, no doubt a lot of you will do plyometric training. For those that don't know what it is, it's effectively to improve your spring. So there'll be lots of like jumping work, which might involve often like heavy squats, heavy leg weights, followed by jumping exercises. So potentially jumping over hurdles. Drop jumps are a favorite, where you might drop off a bench and then spring back up onto another bench. Really, really good form of training. But I did it when I was younger, when maybe I wasn't quite ready to do it. And because of that, yeah, had a few knee issues, and it's just starting to play up now. So ended up having an operation or two when I was younger. And just the last week or so, it's been a bit grumbly. I use that word, grumbly.
A bit grumbly. That's a new term on me.
I think I've just made that up too. But it's one of the... So what ended up happening was ended up having the meniscus taken out when I was young. It's very different now. I feel like the operations they do now are probably a lot better than what they were 20 years ago or so when I had it. So now very little cartilage in the knee. So you've got the whole kind of bone on bone thing going on, which has been fine for years. But just every now and then, if I overdo it a little bit, and you do know that I enjoy my CrossFit, I enjoy a little bit of golf from time to time. And it's actually been golf that has brought it on this time. I played a game of golf, and because when you swing a golf club, all of your weight or a lot of your weight will go through your left leg, me being right-handed, so then putting a lot of pressure through the knee. And unfortunately, when unleashing a 340-yard drive the other day, I did feel a sharp pain in my knee.
Wow, so it's like a daily occurrence now, the price you pay for being a goalkeeper. But I suppose as well, on a serious note, if we can do that occasionally on this show, it does, I guess, put a lot of emphasis on the fact that you do need to look after yourself while you're playing.
True. Yeah, true. And in hindsight, and again, this is where I suppose with some of the lads that I work with, try and offer words of wisdom from time to time. I look back and I definitely engaged in a lot of the plyometric stuff too soon. You know, so I would talk now about definitely look to do it, because I think it's a fantastic form of training. You know, you look at a goalkeeper's game, and as much as you can work on, say, the technical and be a really technically astute goalkeeper, a lot of what we're going to talk about today of those, you know, fantastic saves in terms of immense power, and a lot of the plyometric work will help you get that power. So I certainly advise it. But like I say, in hindsight, I started doing it, I must have been 17, 18, but I didn't really have a base in terms of having done weights, having... I suppose built my legs up at that time, my core up at that time. So although I got instant results, and it was incredible, within like a summer of doing this plyometric work, I went back to training and my spring had improved 10-15%. It was noticeable to a lot of the people around me as to how much improvement there had been. However, before long, I continued to do that type of training and then injured my knee doing so, which annoyingly was then something that I had to play through for the majority of my career.
Okay, do you know what? This is a conversation I'd actually love to deep dive a bit more into. Perhaps that could be a podcast on its own somewhere later down the line. But we are on the clock today, so this is going to be a very short, a very sharp podcast. I did say last week as well that we have plenty of correspondence to cover. We do, but I think we're going to skip it for this week, which is actually a good thing. We're towards the end of the campaign. There's going to be plenty of downtime, so we can certainly cover off those emails and WhatsApps then. But for now, plenty coming up in the Premier League and the EFL. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Right, starting in the Premier League, and we started with him last week, and we'll start with him again. Richard, Jordan Pickford, 8 saves, Leicester 1, Everton 2, man of the match again.
Yeah, I think we can just rinse and repeat what we said last week. I think big game, massive game once again. I mean, who would have predicted the past two results for Everton? But once again, it's given them now a great chance of survival. You know, a lot of people have written them off before the previous game against Chelsea. But no, look, once again, I mean, the big thing for me, and there's a few moments in this game, but it is just how pumped up he is. And it comes back to these big moments. You talk about big players and big moments. And again, he's shown that. You know, he's shown the fact that he loves that type of pressure, whether that's the type of pressure of knockout phases in the World Cup, in the Euros, or whether it is now fighting relegation the way that Everton are. He's certainly stepped up to the plate and has been excellent. And a couple of the saves that he did make that we'll highlight, certainly the top hand, in fact, there's three saves in particular we'll highlight. The top hand save for me, very good. It's his footwork beforehand, because that is arrowing into the top corner, and he gets a couple of really quick steps in. So he doesn't actually have to spring all that much, because he's able to make the save with his top hand. Very, very good save. And then the two saves, sharp low to his left. One, he had to be quite creative, because it's a reaction save down to his left, but not easy to get the angle to get it around the post. And then the next one, ball dipping just in front. And again, enough of a hand to get it around the post, but really powerful, good technique. And again, repeating myself, but big moments, and he stepped up.
He has indeed. Over to Stamford Bridge, Chelsea 2, Wolves 2. And another goalkeeper we've spoken about plenty this season, Jose Sarr, kept Wolves in the game, four big saves he has had. And again, just like you said about Jordan Pickford, we've spoken about it a lot, but he really has had a very good season, especially for his first season in the Premier League.
He has. Again, I feel like I say this comment a lot, in that I don't buy into the stats all that much, because I think they can be warped, but certainly statistically he does show up very, very well. You know, he's made a lot of saves first and foremost this season. He has been very busy, and you're right, some big saves again here. I just like, I suppose it sounds like a really obvious comment, but I just like the way that he keeps goal. You know, I like the decisions that he makes. He's you know, where certain goalkeepers have got certain tendencies, he is very difficult to beat. You know, he seems to make really good decisions, when to stay, when to come. A couple of the saves he made here, very good in particular, where he'll back himself with his reactions in particular. I think the fact that he is as sharp as he is, he'll often turn it into a shot-stopping situation, knowing that he'll always have the edge, given how sharp he is. And a couple of saves he made here, certainly the one on the angle, the reaction save, I thought the speed of reaction, given how hard it was struck, was excellent. And you make a mention of a couple of the other saves. Really good save, low down to his right, back on himself. Couple down, low left. And the notes that I've written, I keep writing clever. I feel like I write this a lot for Jose Sarr, but a really clever save down low to his left. Very good angle of parry. And yes, once again, another solid display.
You like the way he keeps goal. I like that, mate. That's like someone saying he should just kick it. Just kick it. Just kick it out, which is exactly what Ian Wright said about Ian Melier. Arsenal 2, Leeds United 1. Melier was caught out by Eddie Nketiah. I don't think there's a great deal to analyse here, is there? It's just, it is what it is. Saw a similar scenario actually in League 2 with Danny Rogers at Oldham. It's unfortunately one of those things. It's happened at a bad time for Leeds. It's never really a good time to do that as a keeper. But again, it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, it is. Thing is, it's annoying, and that Ian Wright is correct in this instance, but it is what it is, in terms of it is drilled into. You know, as goalkeepers now, it's drilled in, keep possession of the ball. Ball comes back, even if someone's a few yards away, back yourself to have a touch and play out. This is one that when you watch it again, you do feel that the player was always too close. I don't know why, for a start, the player is passing, his defender's passing the ball back to him when he is, you know, essentially towards the middle of the goal, or the ball's being played back towards the middle of the goal, to expect him to turn out and play, which is obviously what they want him to do. It's a big expectation from that position. And I do think, and again, I say this, and I don't want to sound like a dinosaur, but there are times when you have that awareness that someone is that close, that you do just get a big side foot on it, or a big clearance. Now, it doesn't look particularly pretty, and it might not be a fantastic result, given that he won't have much backlift, won't have a run-up, but just to try and get the ball out of danger in that moment. But again, I go back to it, it is drilled into goalkeepers. I do wonder the manager whether he would have said all that much to Melier, or whether he would have said more to the defender as to, you know, having the awareness to pass back to him in that situation. Because I do think there has to be an element of blame on the defender. But certainly from Ilya Melier's point of view, just to have that awareness, just to have that first time clearance in a moment like this when they are that close, I still think that's an important part for a goalkeeper.
I guess as well, though, if he takes the touch and executes the pass,
no one's saying anything.
No one's saying, I'll just boot the ball out.
No, it's true. And look, we see Edison do it week in, week out in this exact situation. I think it's just the fact the touch has to be so good. And even then, does he have an option? You know, and I was watching it again. I don't know if he's had a chance to look up and see what his option would have been or whether he could have played it first time. I don't think he could have. And I don't know. And again, like I said, I don't want to sound like a dinosaur because I'm watching Edison do it and he does it so, so well and very, very, very rarely makes a mistake. So it works. It obviously does work to play the sub. I think even Edison from time to time will have that realization, you know, it's that big danger sign. Like, no, this is too tight. There's not enough to gain now, you know. And as much as he will wait for a player to be right on his toes before he plays a pass out, he's normally got control of the ball when he does that. You know, I know we saw the one a couple of weeks ago that obviously got highlighted as well as it did because it was that tight. He was on his goal line. We've seen him do that several times. I was at the Watford Man City game this season, did exactly the same thing. He does it very, very regularly. Of course, that one was highlighted more because it was live on Sky on a Sunday or whatever it was. So it was, and in such a big game. But he does do that. But ordinarily, he does have control of the ball. I just think on this one, Melier never really had control of the ball. The player was literally 4 or 5 yards away as it's coming back to him. So to expect to take a touch and get it away within a split second is quite a lot. I suppose my point being is I think there is a line where you realise, actually, this is too dangerous. At this point, maybe I do need to get rid.
Over to Brighton 4, Manchester United 0, where in terms of your archetypal shot-stopping type of performance, Robert Sanchez wasn't under siege at the Emirates. However, yet another very strong, very solid performance from the Spaniard. Had a hand in the third goal as well.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, lovely pass out to the left wing. Really drilled it. It was more like a shot. You know, and you often find goalkeepers describe it like this, rather than a clip to a fullback or a winger, it's almost like a shot out to the winger because the speed at which it got there, which is what allowed Brighton then to break so quickly and score 2-3 passes later. But no, I thought it was excellent. You know, he mentioned he did make several saves, great reaction save from a Cavani, was it a header or a volley, whatever it was, but excellent save, good right hand, good reaction. What was interesting, I actually sent you something just to, I suppose, highlight the point as well when it comes to rating goalkeepers. Like for me, this was an excellent performance. This for me is a, you know, a 9 out of 10. There's not a lot more that I think Robert Sanchez could have done with this performance. Yet I get a lot of the Google alerts through, so I'll often get all the reviews through from goalkeepers' performances, and you'll always get the ratings out of 10. And you know, a team loses 5-0, then a goalkeeper gets 3 out of 10. A team wins 5-0, a goalkeeper gets 6 out of 10. You have a Jordan Pickford type performance, and they'll get a 9 out of 10. But it was interesting for this performance in that a lot of the papers had him as a 9, but there were still a few papers that had him as a 6. You know, quiet afternoon for Sanchez, nothing to do, not considering the fact that he has a hand in a goal that they score and makes a couple of great saves. It's so interesting. I guess it does feed into what we talk about a lot in terms of analysing goalkeepers. And when you will get someone sat there watching the entire game, having to then analyse Sanchez, you can get such disparity.
Yeah, you really can. And David De Gea, on that note as well, I suppose, I'm presuming this is going to be a quick response from you. The first and the second goals scored by Brighton, there were suggestions on the analysis that he, open quotation marks, will feel he could have done better, close quotation marks. I'm guessing you're going to say that's not the case.
No, look, the first one, you can see that he can't see. You know, the reaction says it all. He almost stands up a little bit before because he's just unsighted. So this is one of them. Does he then try and lean round the player in order to get a sight of it? But we've seen that recently. You know, if he leans round, if anything, it might make it even more difficult. So he's seen the ball late. And it's one of them, as much as it doesn't look like it's been fired into the corner, it has gone right in the corner. At the point at which he sees it, it's probably 15 to 18 yards. So he's having to react off that. And look, if there's anyone in the world that could react to this and get down very quickly, it is a David De Gea. So I think it is as simple as the fact that he didn't see that one. And no, the second one, this is him just taking up a true position and it's fired. Yes, you know, again, he go open quotation marks, near post, close quotation marks. But, you know, it is reasonably central. He is taking up a true position and it's a brilliant finish up into the top corner.
Manchester City 5, Newcastle 0. Just want you to clear up the second goal conceded by Martin Dubravka here. Scathing analysis yet again that he'd made a big error here. A Gundogan volley from a corner. It was spilled by Dubravka. Ruben Diaz with the challenge. And then Aymeric Laporte smashed in the loose ball.
No, it's for me, it's a small error that's received big punishment. But this, and this is why a lot of goalkeeper coaches will really hone in on, you know, the basics, the bread and butter, as a lot of the goalkeeper coaches like to call it, where you'll go through your volleys, your half volleys, your pickups, your dippers, maybe low dives, mid dives, almost to start a session. There's a lot of goalkeeper coaches that will still do that. But this is that classic one. This is that dipper in front of you where you need to be so, so clean. But it is tough. You're playing in a stadium, in a big game, where the ball's fired through a crowd, it's pitching in front of you at pace, and you need to catch it clean. And it is a good example as to just why and how important it is that you do get it clean, because it wasn't like it got away from him all that much. You know, ordinarily, this happens, and then he gets on the second ball, and no one says anything. But this is one of those situations where it wasn't quite clean, and he had then a crowd of Man City players around him, and within a flash, they've got on it and put it in the corner. So in terms of the level of error, it's reasonably small, but the fact that it ends up in a goal, of course, then people are going to question his handling, whether his handling could have been that bit better. You know, so it's a frustrating one for him, because as difficult as it is, he would have had an expectation of himself to be clean in that situation. But I just think it is a nice lesson or a nice point to make that so many goalkeeper coaches will talk about these situations. And, you know, no doubt you goalkeepers listening in, you'll have a goalie coach that will be on your case when the ball does just pop off you ever so slightly, because you can get the ultimate punishment as he did here. And it's a shame, because he actually played very well other than that, made a few good saves. I mean, they, you know, Man City were obviously very, very good, and I don't think this would have made all that much difference. But of course, it just shows you, for all the saves he makes and a positive game, this would have been one of those situations I just spoke about where he will get a 3 or a 4 in the newspaper, because, you know, a ball came off him a matter of half a yard, and unfortunately it cost a goal.
Four quick ones before we finish on Ben Foster. That Sanchez distribution was also evident in the game between Liverpool and Spurs. Hugo Lloris having a hand in Tottenham's opener at Anfield. Nick Pope in Burnley's defeat to Aston Villa. More examples of this in the Championship as well, where goals are starting with the goalkeeper. Tim Krul, when it's not going your way, I guess it's just not going your way, both for him and Norwich. And David Raya, two saves here where he's held onto the ball against Southampton, I think it was, wasn't it? He's held onto the ball. We so often hear that goalkeepers just don't catch things these days. He showed in that game that they most certainly still do.
They certainly can. And do you know what? I was going to make a point on this, which is you often see this time of the year, like start of the season, end of the season, when it's that little bit drier, the weather's that bit better, and goalkeeping is that little bit easier, in my opinion. And again, it's a shame we don't have the Twitter, because I'd love to hear people's thoughts on this. But it's one of the thoughts that I've had for a long time, where I watch goalkeepers that maybe perform in Spain or, you know, Southern Europe, and they're playing in much nicer conditions, and you don't have the wet, windy, horrible weather that you might have to deal with, the slippy gloves, etc., etc. And David Reyes showing here that although they were both quite fierce shots and both going in the corner, knowing that he could get there with two hands and knowing how good his technique is, he was able to pluck both, which was great. And it looked great. And I love the fact that it got some praise from both the commentators, and you could tell the fans really enjoyed it as well, because it is quite unusual, especially now, even more so with the balls in the Premier League. It is much safer a lot of the time to parry it away, but to have the awareness to make the save and make the catch, I thought was very good. And, you know, for him personally, again, rounding off another very good season. And I think that's now Brentford mathematically safe. So a big day for them as well. And to touch on a couple of the others that you mentioned there. Yeah, tough day for Tim Krul. And it was one of them. I felt sorry for him on the first deflection. I don't think there's a massive error there. I think, you know, it's just one of them. Are the goalkeepers that make that save? Possibly. It doesn't look great when it kind of almost squirms through you, but the deflection was big. He's had to readjust, couldn't quite do it. The second one, I think he'd be a bit frustrated with the fact that he comes out to smother, goes with one hand opposed to two. I do feel that if he comes out and tries to get two hands to this, he will likely either hold it, or it could well be a foul if the player comes in and takes it from his grasp. But it just felt like he was almost trying to be a bit too clever with the one hand, like just to parry it into safety. But of course, takes a ricochet, and unfortunately, it takes him out, takes the defender out, and ends up in the back of the net. So that was a tough moment for him. And Ben Foster giving quite an honest appraisal after the game, and it, you know, has been a really tough season for Watford. A good season, I'd say, or certainly a positive season on the whole, I think, for Ben, from what I've seen. But yeah, it does seem like there are issues behind the scenes there.
Into what is effectively the last EFL overview of the season. The playoffs are upon us, of course, so hopefully we'll be covering those in isolation. But for now, sound that klaxon. Yes, David Button with an assist for Adam Reach as West Brom finished their campaign as they'll no doubt hope to start the next. Not the best campaign for the Baggies, but hopefully they will bounce back because Barnsley were bashed on the final day of the season. Jack Walton, however, denying Carlin Grant with a hat-trick from the spot, so good to see that. Wes Fotheringham scampering across his goal. Pickford-esque, you might say, after last week at Chelsea. He kept a clean sheet against Fulham. Sheffield United flying into the playoffs from Fotheringham with quite an incredible record of late standard David Bentley acrobatics to sign the season off. And Nathan Baxter also signing off a loan spell at Hull with a decent double stop. Interesting to see what happens with him next season, as it will be the entire goalkeeping landscape, not just in the Championship, but across all four tiers and beyond. So exciting, so much likely to happen.
Yeah, nice for Nathan Baxter to have a positive performance. Obviously a tough weekend for them last weekend away at Bristol City, so nice to turn that around. To mention a few of the others, David Button, lovely assist, lovely pass. Of course, distribution is a big strength of his, and it was a lovely pass downfield, and nice way to finish the season. That he's played the last few games with Sam Johnstone not having played, and of course running down his contract, etc. So you'd think that David Button will go in as a strong number one next season. Wes Fotheringham, brilliant save this. I thought the speed of feet to get across the goal, the bravery shown to be able to provide or produce the block that he did, and it was a massive, massive result this for Sheffield United, a real statement of intent going into the playoffs. And for him personally, again, massive credit. You know, I think that a lot of people did question whether he would be able to step in on the back of the likes of obviously Aaron Ramsdale and goalkeepers they've had previously, but he's been excellent. You know, I think the percentages of clean sheets, well over 50%, which is phenomenal. Since he's been in the team, the rise of Sheffield United has been fantastic as well. So a massive well done to him. Really got himself back on the map this season in a big, big way. Dan Bentley, yeah, another excellent performance. And certainly he's finished the season very strong. Big save up high, very acrobatic, very Dan Bentley-esque. He really is very, very powerful. You mentioned Walton's save, and it'd be interesting actually for Jack Walton, their situation, whether Brad Collins will find a way to stay in the Championship given the season that he's had. If so, then again, Jack Walton's had a nice opportunity now to show what he's about, and no doubt he'll be in a good position to be a number one next season in League One, you'd feel.
And before we move on to League One, sadly, Richard, it is one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper keeper.
Yes, a goal gifted to Luton's Harry Cornick. Reading's Oyun Nyland, sadly, the culprit here.
Yeah, and it's, do you know what? You could see it at the time. For those that watched this game live, it was a really, I suppose, a really bizarre moment where, and from what I understand, people were screaming at him in the stadium. You know, people could see what was going on, and we just see this goal so often, or too often. You know, it is the classic one that I think Shay Givens had it done to him before. There's several others to mention, but you see a lot of goalkeepers now that do the over-exaggerated spin, you know, but I can see that becoming more and more of a thing where they do turn all the way around every time, because I just feel this, like he's come out and I know there was a bit of a question as to whether Cornick was offside initially or what have you, but the fact that those players run past him, you do feel like there would be that awareness in the moment to think, okay, there have been players that have run past me. So, yeah, potentially that might be a reason as to why you'd look over your shoulder. But at the same time, you're playing in a huge game, a big pressure game, certainly a massive game for Luton. And maybe in that moment, all you're thinking about is, yes, I've smothered it. You're looking in front of you. You see that everyone's dropped off and you don't consider it in that moment. I guess we all have, not just in football, but in daily life, where things slip our mind and we kick ourselves later. It kind of feels like that a bit, where, okay, we can look at it and we can judge and say, surely he should have thought this or that or whatever, but maybe he is the type of goalkeeper that ordinarily would check and just didn't on this one occasion. Unfortunately, it was very costly.
I know this is the Goalkeepers Union podcast, but sometimes we have things in life that slip our mind.
That's all I can come up with right now.
I don't think that you can use that as an excuse for a goalkeeper. It just slipped his mind.
Well, no, sometimes things do. That's all I can think of here because
They do, but you can't allow that to happen. That's the whole point, it's the focus.
Surely you've had it where you've gone out to the car, you've gone to put the car in, I've left my wallet inside. Like, surely that's happened from you from time to time.
Of course it has, but that's completely different to professional football.
That's exactly what's happened here. He's like, right, keys, phone, wallet, and he's left his wallet.
Okay, to be fair, that is a greater discussion there that we'll quickly mention here. We'll just quickly talk about this because seeing some of the last games of the season last week in League One, this week in the Championship and League Two, of course, so many times you hear people say, oh, they're on the beach already this season. And Connor Cody actually said that really hurt us as Wolves players before their game against Chelsea. It really hurt us that we saw those reports that we were on the beach. That's not the case for professional footballers. We're still humans. For you, if there was a dead rubber, a couple of dead rubbers towards the end of the campaign that didn't affect the top of the table, didn't affect the bottom of the table. I know sometimes there are incentives and bonuses for finishing higher up the table. Did you ever, as a footballer, get towards those final couple of games and just think, oh, do you know what? I might lose focus a bit because I'm actually not that committed as I ordinarily would be.
It's a really good question because, and this is, we could do a whole podcast on this alone because there's so many different agendas at play where, as you say, from a club's point of view, every position in the league is worth a certain amount of money. So, you know, climbing from 16th to 14th could be worth, you know, six-figure sum. So, of course, the owners are desperate to get those places up. For a player that's running down his contract, they'll be worried about getting an injury. So, although they might be forced to play, again, I say force, no one can force a player to play, but, you know, it's one of them where they can't necessarily pull out, so they might feel they have to play. They'll have in the back of their mind, I do not want to get injured, which in itself will mean that they're not playing at 100%. And you often find, this is why I think you often find a lot of these games are very dead games. When there's very little goes on, 0-0 draws, 1-1 draws, nothing really happening in these games. And it is because of that. And it's not necessarily a conscious decision that I'm not going to try today. It is probably self-preservation, not really having a huge motivation to play for in terms of, you know, if you're not necessarily playing for a position in the league or for personal gain, then, yeah, you have to question where a motivation might be. So it is tricky because, again, they're not necessarily conscious thoughts. It is just that awareness that actually there is nothing riding on this game.
Definitely one for another podcast, I think, at another time. Maybe something we'll ask one of our goalkeeper guests too, because that really is an interesting subject. Just to finish again on the Championship and that game, very quickly, Matty Ingram cancelled his honeymoon, I saw, for a second time to be involved in this playoff run-in with Luton Town. So massive props to him and good to see him just get that clean sheet after that opening game against Fulham.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant. I was worried, really worried for Luton because you lose seven. It's very difficult to turn that around in the next game, regardless of who you play. And for them to somehow battle out a 1-0 win, obviously we spoke about the goal, but to battle out a clean sheet and get themselves, and for Luton to be in the playoffs is just extraordinary. You know, their budget is one of the lowest in the Championship. They've had so many injuries. You know, we spoke a lot about their goalkeeping issues. They haven't got a big squad, and yet they have now got a chance of the Premier League. Albeit, I would say, given the injuries, on paper, they would be the least likely out of the four teams. But it is the playoffs, and you never know.
In League Two, where there was drama at the top, Port Vale into the playoffs, where they meet Swindon. Aidan Stone, a good first half save from Matt Jay of Exeter. Exeter, by the way, who were going for the title. So a great win for Port Vale. Another good performance from Aidan Stone. He's been in for Thomas Holy and Lucas Kovalan after that red card. So he's really fought back to win his place, Aidan Stone, at Port Vale. And Northampton also in the playoffs, where they will play Mansfield. It could have been automatic promotion for them had it not been for a remarkable turnaround. Seven goals scored by Bristol Rovers. Heroics from Barrow goalkeeper Paul Farman. And sadly, a red card for Liam Roberts.
Yeah, it was the most, it's the craziest last day. And I guess it would have been a slight worry for Northampton, knowing that Bristol Rovers were coming up against Scunthorpe, who, going back to the conversation we just had, already relegated, nothing to play for necessarily, a young team by all accounts. So there is always that concern. But I did feel for Northampton because, you know, to know that a 3-1 win, or to go away and win 3-1, really good victory, really good performance. And to not get promoted, to see a five-goal swing, or in the end it had to be 7-0. Just extraordinary. So certainly felt for Northampton. And Liam Roberts in particular, who had been excellent during the game. Again, nothing he could have done about the goal. And actually the sending off, for those that have seen it, it's late on in the game. It's one that balls come over, a slight misjudgment, but then you've got the decision. Do you allow it to go past you and probably concede a goal? But knowing in this moment that their one chance of automatic promotion was, again, if they could get an extra goal, or if Scunthorpe were to score in that moment, he decided or knew that conceding a goal could have been catastrophic, so decided to take the red card. So I kind of feel like that is what it is, and I can't imagine that anyone would have been too upset with him for doing that. But yeah, just an extraordinary day. And he mentioned Aidan Stone, good performance. Exeter, had they have got a result in that game, they would have won the league, but as it is, losing that game meant that they come second. Forest Green with a late equaliser meant they won the league. So yeah, I mean, loads we could talk about goalkeeping wise in this league, but just a fascinating last day, which, and it has been quite good for that this season, certainly in the Championship, although I kind of felt like the Championship, by the end of the first half on the final day, you pretty much knew where everyone was going to be. You know, Luton obviously had to hold on to their lead, but you felt reasonably confident they would. Whereas for me, League Two was the one this season where it really was right down to the wire. And even that, the fact that the Bristol Rovers game, the amount of added on time, you know, waiting for that final whistle, just extraordinary. Clean Sheet Club. Well, this is it for the EFL, although there are some Premier League games to go, of course. But it is, of course, time for this. We start in the Premier League. David Raya, bee's knees. Jack Butland, account opened. Robert Sanchez, bright on time. Lucas Fabianski, roly-poly. Edison, massive. Mark Travers going up, up, up. Dylan Phillips, first since August. Jamal Blackman, na, 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 na. Matt Ingram, he got that message in a bottle. Di Cornell, 2-4 to finish. Wes Fodringham, 2-4 and still going. Senny Dieng, long awaited. David Button, hat-trick. Alex Bass, no trouble. James Belshaw, on the gas. Aidan Stone, clean when it counted. Dean Bouzanis, heaven 17. Sam Hornby, call you bet. Joe Murphy, threesy, mersey, peasy. Jake Eastwood, didn't fail for Dale. Lewis Ward, rocking with the Robins.
Lovely stuff, very good, Richard. Sounding a little bit like the Crazy Frog again there in that one. Very close to being Crazy Frog-esque.
Is that what that was, the Jamal Blackman?
No, it's not Crazy Frog, no.
No, but what is na 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 na? Yeah.
What would you normally hear that? It's Batman, isn't it? No, 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 no.
Right, Blackman. Clever, yeah. Clever, I get it now. Very good. Okay, I didn't read it out very well then.
No, sorry, but it's okay. Onto the table, where Liam Roberts is still, for now, top of the pile. So the three clean sheets in a row that he got towards the back end of the season could prove to be crucial, followed by not having clean sheets in a row, which may also be crucial. 21 in 46 games. That is where he has finished. Remarkable season for him. We won't be counting the playoffs, of course. It finishes as the regular season finishes. Behind him by one, Alisson and now Edison. They are even on 20 apiece. Alisson in 33, Edison in 34. Mark Travers has also moved up to 20. That's in 45, but no more games for him this season. And Wes Fodderingham, I just want to mention him because that's 18 in 32. What a record. That is on par with Alisson and Edison. He will be going into the playoffs, but like I said, those will not be included. So Liam Roberts, you have got a few games in the Premier League to hold on, hopefully, for that crown.
There you go. Fantastic. Really, really exciting. I know I say this every year and we haven't done it yet, but are we going to get a clean sheet trophy and send, I mean, we'll just post it to Edison, Man City FC, Manchester. I don't know the postcode. We'll just send it. You never know. He might receive it.
A few bits of goalkeeper news to finish, Richard. Firstly, Craig Gordon, Scottish Football Writers Player of the Year. That's the third time he's won that award. That's a very impressive achievement for him, especially when you consider what Rangers and Celtic have done this season. And also Matias Sarkic, named Birmingham Supporters Player of the Year. Considering the fact, I don't think he's played since the opening game of the year of 2022. That shows what a season he had and what esteem he is held in by those Birmingham fans. Andy Dibble looks like he's on his way out of Cardiff after quite a few years of service as the goalkeeper coach there. And just a precursor to GK's On Their Way, which is going to be back, of course. Very excited about that. We're going to go into all of the goalkeepers who have moved already towards the end of the season. And we will be doing a review show for all four tiers of the Football League and Premier League too. But Cheltenham Town, transfer listing Owen Evans, midway through a two-year deal. We don't often see this in League One, particularly. Scott Flinders also released, so they will be bringing in two, if not three, new goalkeepers next season.
Yeah, it's unusual. It's unusual they make it so public, because look, the truth is, there's a lot of teams out there that maybe would be open to moving on their goalkeeper and bringing in another goalkeeper, but they don't maybe make it all that public. They might, you know, speak to agents or speak to whoever they need to in order to let it be known that that's the case. But yeah, the fact that this has been made so public is quite unusual. Sad news in regards to Andy Dibble. Obviously great service at Cardiff and a lot of, very good goalkeepers he's worked with over the past few years. A lot of success, of course, with Neil Etheridge in the Premier League in particular. Alex Smithies has done a great job there. Dylan Phillips done a great job there. So a lot of success for him to speak of, but he will be moving on. And yeah, a massive well done to Mateusz Sarkic. I mean, look, he was excellent. You look back to pre-season, and for those that remember this, they lost, I think it was 5-0 to West Brom, and he got so much stick. And you just felt, coming from a fellow Birmingham club, coming from Wolves, whether this had disaster written all over it. And I say reason, well, it was completely untested at Championship level at that time, having played for Shrewsbury last season, but really hit the ground running when the league started. Some great performances. So I think it is largely down to that, the fact that he did as well as he did. I think there's also an element with Birmingham, you know, it's not a happy place at the moment. I think that's fair to say. Really tough job there for Lee Bowyer and the staff there, given some of the issues off the field. So you can't help but feel maybe that also played a part in this. But certainly first and foremost, yeah, Mateusz Sarkic to come in and do what he did over the span of 20-25 games, whatever it was excellent. And no doubt if they had the opportunity of bringing him in again next season to compete with Neil Etheridge, I'm sure they would.
Okay, Richard, that was short and sharp. One of the shortest and sharpest I think we've ever done. We're going to try and record same time next week, but it might be a bit difficult. So it could be that we're back towards the back end of next week, okay?
Indeed. I'm in LA and you are abroad as well. We're jet
setting. Oh, wow. We're quite close. I didn't realize you... Well, we're not really close. We're over the West Coast.
You're
West Coast of Canada. You're West Coast of the US. We're really close. Just a stone's throw.
Just a four-hour flight. Yeah, really close.
Okay, so next week might be a bit difficult. Wow, we're actually discovering this on the spot right now. So it's most likely we're going to be available towards the back end of next week.
Indeed. Well, when we do talk, I am going to an LA Galaxy game, so we'll be able to discuss that. They're playing Dallas on Saturday, so I'll get to see Mr. Bond in action. And actually Martin Paish as well, who joined from Utrecht, has joined Dallas. So I'm really excited to see these two goalkeepers, so I'll be able to do a GKPI, all being well.
Lovely stuff. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers.
Away!